Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair has covered the CFL, 4 Olympics, and 8 World Series, including one during an earthquake. So yeah, live radio is a piece of cake. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
So Marty Brodeur will retire from the NHL after 22 years with a 691, 397, 176 record, a 224 goals against average, a save percentage of 912. In 1,266 games, all but seven of them with the New Jersey Devils. He's got the NHL record in the regular season for wins, shutouts, games played, and minutes played. He's first in Stanley Cup playoff starts and shutouts and second in wins. He defined an era of goaltending with outrageous, outrageous statistics. And I guess the only blemish in Marty's career, it's not really a blemish, but as someone who kind of watched Martin from the start of his career to the end, the fact that he played those seven games with the St. Louis Blues, the fact that he wore another uniform at any time other than the uniform of the New Jersey Devils. Not really a blemish, but you wonder right now if it was worth it. And I understand that Martin Brodeur, like all great athletes, needed to find closure to his career. And Martin Brodeur certainly deserved the right to find that closure the way he wanted to find it. He certainly earned the right to be the one to say, I'm not playing anymore, as opposed to having somebody else do it for him. But I really wonder right now, whether or not Marty Brodeur kind of regrets coming back. It would have been nice to be able to say, hey, I played every minute of every NHL game with one team. Think about how special that would be in this day and age of free agency, in this day and age of salary cap, to have played your entire career with just one team. And in a market, you know, it's a significant market, but a franchise that was certainly not one of the biggest franchises in the NHL, one of the most successful, yes, but we're not talking about the Rangers. We're not talking about the Kings. Not even talking about the Blackhawks or Detroit. We're talking about New Jersey. So, as I sit here and look at Martin Brodeur's career, you know, there's a little wistfulness that it wasn't all played with the New Jersey Devils, but at the same time, that's balanced out with the understanding that every great professional athlete really does deserve the chance to go out on their own and does deserve, I think anyhow, the chance to set that schedule for their departure. The best thing, and you could talk to any former athlete about this, the guys who really are at peace with their careers are the guys who made the decision when they wanted to make the decision, not when someone else made it for them. Ken Danico is the New Jersey Devils TV analyst. The Devils and Leafs will play tonight. The Leafs will get the post-All-Star break portion of their schedule going again in Newark. They have lost six in a row. You know they don't have Dion Phaneuf. We'll have the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and also on Sportsnet Ontario. Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils TV analyst, joins us now on The Jeff Blair Show. Ken, thanks a lot for doing this. What are your thoughts about when people ask you about Martin Brodeur? What is the first thing that comes into your mind? Go ahead. Go ahead, Ken. I think we dropped Ken. Or Ken dropped us. Again, he is the New Jersey Devils TV analyst, former teammate of Martin Brodeur's. Brodeur, by the way, is retiring to join the St. Louis Blues front office. We will have that news conference tomorrow at 11:30 a.m. It'll be live from the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis. Martin Brodeur had taken the last couple of weeks off from the St. Louis Blues. Became obvious that he was going to be the number three goalie in the Blues plans. So he took a couple of weeks off to really get his mind, get his mind set, get the decision made. We are joined now by Ken Danico. Ken, thanks a lot for doing this. Sorry for the technical glitch. No problem, my man. What's the first thing you think of when the name Martin Brodeur is mentioned to you?
Well, obviously greatness. I mean, one of the, if not the best goaltender that ever played the game and changed the game because of his puck handling ability. And fortunately, I was part of that, able to win three Stanley Cups. And we know he was a huge part of that, along with a few other guys. But certainly Marty Brodeur was the rock back there in a game that goaltending is the most important position. I heard what you had to say, Jeff. I agree with you on a few things, and you kind of stole the words out of my mouth. It would have been nice to see him play. I usually have pretty thick skin over this stuff, but it would have been nice to see him play his entire career with the New Jersey Devils. And so I kind of have a little sorrowness in that. I mean, it should have been a fairy tale ending where Marty Brodeur rides off in the sunset as the Devils. I'm a little confused why, if I'm going to be brutally honest, why the press conference, why the retirement part isn't in New Jersey. I know it's in St. Louis, and he's only been there a couple of months, and I understand maybe even after the press conference he went back there and worked a little bit because he's under contract or whatever it may be. You know, everybody has to do what's right. But that part of it. But other than that, look, this is a day where, or it's going to be a day tomorrow where it should be celebrate the illustrious career of Marty Brodeur, having said all that.
Well, and you know, the thing, Ken, I mean, we've seen it with a lot of professional athletes. Guys have to, and you may have gone through this as well. The idea is to walk away when you want to walk away, right? That's the ultimate. Not have someone say, hey, you know what? Can't do it anymore. You want to be able to say, hey, I've made the decision. And I'm like you in a way. After all these games that Marty played, and I guess only Marty can answer this, Ken, I wonder why it took him 7 more games to figure out that this isn't what he wanted to do.
Well, the only thing I could probably figure out, Jeff, I think is, look, he wanted to leave the game with no regrets. And look, to perform at the level of a Marty Brodeur or a Brett Favre, to go to other sports, Michael Jordan even, you got to have an ego. You got to have confidence about you. And that's not a negative. I'm saying you got to be a proud guy, obviously. And Marty felt he could still get the job done and wasn't in his gut, in his mind, was not done yet. And in fact, you know, he showed he could still win some games at a certain point. He won 3 in St. Louis. So, you know, I guess he felt he needed to really, really make 100% sure that this was the right decision. However, no, would I have liked to seen it different? Would I have handled it differently? Probably from last year to this year. I don't know how it all materialized, because we never do. We never know the conversations that are going on. Mm-hmm. I know the respect General Manager Lou Lamoriello and Marty have for each other. So I'm a little confused in certain areas, but from another standpoint, you're right. An athlete should be able, especially one is with the resume that Marty Brodeur has, should be able to go out his way. But like I said, I'm just a little confused why it's in St. Louis. Other than that, I'm sure one day we'll see Marty back in Jersey, I would expect, but that's all speculation, and you never know what path everybody chooses and what materializes down the road.
Now, he is going to be in a front office or a coaching capacity with the Blues for the rest of the year. Do you see him as a guy who will make a career for himself in the game after he retired? Or do you think he's the type of guy that maybe he'll try it out for the rest of the year and then kind of say, you know what? Man, I've spent so many so many days on the road, so many nights on the road. I'm just going to kind of find something else to do, golf, fish, hunt, whatever.
Well, I would think that, you know, certainly it's a little bit of trial and error. And I think what people forget, I mean, you hear some people, I'll just step right into management, do this. Not easy. And just to come in cold right after such a long career and such a grind physically and mentally, I believe you have to take a step back for a year or two, really, in my opinion, to really see what direction you want to go. And obviously, you know, being with the Blues in whatever capacity, I don't know exactly what it would be. Like you said, in some coaching capacity, just kind of advisory role. You know, he'll learn and learn a little bit and understand maybe what exactly he wants to do. Do I see him staying in the game in some capacity? Oh, I think that's a good possibility for sure. But I don't think anybody should step right into it the second they stop playing, because I think you need to let the wind out of the sails a little bit and relax. That's just my opinion.
Ken Danico in conversation with us on the Jeff Blair Show. All right, shifting focus, Ken, to tonight's game. Two teams that are, well, the Leafs are in a free fall right now. The Devils, 17-22-8. They're certainly kind of wondering what the immediate future holds for them. This would be the third straight season if they don't make the playoffs, the third straight season they've missed the playoffs. Got to ask you, when you look at this Devils team right now, what is your sense of this team for the future? Is it at least positioned well moving forward, or is this a team that needs to do an awful lot of work to get itself lined up to the point where it can consider itself to be a playoff team next year?
I think somewhere in between. I think there is some work to be done. There's no doubt about that. You talk about the age, you talk about speed and things like that. Look, the Devils will always, and what I've always respected, and even now watching this team the last couple of years, you're going to have to earn a victory against them. And that's just been the MO, and that's one of the wonderful traits about being a New Jersey Devil, regardless whether they're not as good as we used to be in our heyday, obviously, not making the playoffs the last couple of years, and possibly, again, not this year. You got to earn a victory. Having said that, are they down up front a little bit on skill and talent level? Yeah. Do they have a nice stable of young defensemen in the pipeline? There's no doubt about that. So I think they're somewhere in between. I think a tweak, a player here or there, and revamp and get a little bit younger and a little more speed, whether it's an off-season acquisition, whether it's a trade, using one of your blue-chip defensemen to maybe get a skilled forward down the road, I think that's all those things are possibilities. But they got to do some retooling. There's no question about it. And I think maybe with what's gone on in New Jersey this year, there's a lot on their plate. Maybe that has something to do with what the decision with Marty Porter as well here, because, you know, there's some moving parts right now. There's no hiding the fact of that, but they do play hard. Even as a color analyst, like it's, people say, you know, I try to be honest. Look, I wear my heart in my sleeve. When you play here 20 years, you love the New Jersey Devils. But as a color analyst, I try to tell it like it is, but it's hard. Sometimes people want you to rip them. It's hard to rip guys that are giving everything they have. You know what I mean? And yes, the results aren't always what you want. But this isn't a team that, believe me, if it was out of laziness or the work ethic wasn't there, it would perturb me as well as a fan and as an announcer. But they give it their all, and you can only play with what you play as good as what you have. And right now, they're a little down on the skill level, but they played better going into the All-Star break, and they're looking forward to seeing what they can do with a lot of home games coming up. So it's going to be interesting for them as well.
Hey, Ken, how is this sort of multi-headed coaching staff working out?
Well, I got to say it was a little strange at first. I know everybody thought it was a little peculiar, but in a weird way, I think it's working out pretty well. I mean, from a standpoint that it was the ideal situation because of the guys coming in. They're familiar with the organization. That's what Lou likes. They're very accepting of how this dynamic has played out with Adam O'Tanlon and the forwards. And obviously, he was here and well-respected with the players. Scott Stevens, we know what he's meant to the Devils organization and what he's done from a defensive standpoint. He can share his knowledge with a lot of these young defensemen. So, and then Lou overlooking everything. I don't know how long that will last. I don't expect it to be the whole season. But I think it's kind of worked out pretty well, and they've kind of really just simplified everything. And it wouldn't happen overnight, but just see now that they're playing with what within the system and what they have to be successful. I think Scott Stephens-Amos have just really taken a step back here, and there's no egos involved, and both those guys understand why they were brought in. And moving forward, there's no, you know, one guy trying to outdo another. It's their friends. They played together, and they understand the situation. They'll let the chips fall where they may. In fact, if one of these guys is going to, moving forward, going to be a head coach with the New Jersey Devils. But it's the dynamics work pretty good so far, maybe surprisingly.
Ken, you've seen Jaromir Jagr all year. We're getting close to the NHL trade deadline. If you were a team contending for a playoff spot, would you take a shot in having Jaromir in your team, even for special teams play?
Well, I think so. There's no question about that. It has to be the right situation. I mean, obviously, you know, he's had a good fit here in New Jersey where since he's been here the last couple of years, he's gotten a lot of ice time. He's been able to perform at a high level still amazingly at his age, and it really is remarkable, first and foremost. But I think it would have to be a team that, you know, talks to him, and he understands as well that, you know, you might not get 19, 20 minutes a night, but will you come in here, and when we need a big play or a big goal or a big assist in a situation like the power play, and it doesn't mean he wouldn't get ice time because he still really is performing at a high level and can get it done. But I think the right situation, no doubt, I think there would have to be, if the Devils do fall out, there would have to be a scenario where a team could use a Jaromir Jagr because the guy is the ageless wonder, as I like to call him.
Ken, it was great of you to join us, speaking of ageless wonder. Thanks so much for doing this.
All right, Tom, my pleasure, man. Take care.
That's Ken Danico, New Jersey Devils color analyst. One of the really good guys in the game. And so there you go. Marty Broder, again, just to refresh that, we will have the news conference at 11:30. I believe we're carrying it live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Travis? I believe we're carrying it live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Marty Broder will announce his retirement from the game. And Ken Danico's right. A little odd to see him doing it in St. Louis after 7 games, a month and a bit, a couple of months with the St. Louis Blues, retiring in St. Louis to join the Blues front office for the rest of the year. Odd in that you would think if Marty Brodeur was announcing his retirement, it would come with the New Jersey Devils as the backdrop. And I think you detected in Ken Danico's voice the understanding of a guy who played in the NHL as long as Ken Danico did, the understanding that a player wants to call the ball in his own retirement, doesn't want to have someone else say it's time to walk away. But you also heard, I think, from Ken Danico, the 20-year New Jersey Devil, that it would have been tied up in a much neater package had Marty Brodeur just simply retired as a member of the New Jersey Devils. A couple of people on Twitter said this is kind of like Wayne Gretzky playing for the Blues. I don't know about that. I mean, we're talking 7 games here. But it really does seem and will seem odd seeing that little addendum, that little line on Marty Brodeur's biography when it's done, you know, 2014, 2015, St. Louis Blues, 7 games. But again, when you're a great athlete, you do get a chance to, or you want a chance to be the one to decide when you are going to retire. The Toronto Raptors, I don't know if you'd say they're on a roll. A year ago, we'd say they're on a roll. Now we're just kind of, we're getting used to this winning thing. It's not that big a deal anymore. Now we're interested in brownie points. Now we're interested in process as much as result. The Raptors beat the Indiana Pacers 104-91 yesterday. DeMar DeRozan, 24 points. Kyle Lowry, a terrific game with 19 points. It was once again, the guy who set the pace for the Raptors, 8 assists as well. And the Raptors are now 30-15. It's their third straight win. And they broke the franchise record for most wins before the All-Star break at 30. And they've still got a few more games left to go. We've talked in the past couple of days about how the Raptors have looked more and more like the Raptors we remember before DeMar DeRozan went down with his injury. And I think last night was even more of a manifestation of that. Eric Smith is our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And Eric Smith joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Eric, everybody has been talking about, Grange talked about it in the weekend, Jonesy talked about it yesterday as well. All the broadcasters, all you guys, you have all said that you kind of get the sense that as DeMar DeRozan gets back up to speed, so too are the Raptors getting back up to speed. And I guess what I want to ask you is, I think maybe we've been so focused on Kyle Lowry this year, and with good reason. He's going to the All-Star game. He's written himself large in this city, let alone with the basketball team. But this might be serving as a bit of a reminder about just how important and how much of a tone setter DeMar DeRozan is.
I completely agree with that. And I think, you know, some people maybe have forgotten how good this guy is and how much he's improved over the course of his career, Jeff. You know, every year it seems like he was challenged to bring another component to his game or to rise to another level, whether it was, you know, you're not going to be a guy that can have a mid-range game. You're only an athletic player. Well, he developed a mid-range game. You can't shoot the three. He's tried to become a better three-point shooter. You got to take the challenge defensively. You've got to live up to the terms of your contract, which now looks like a steal. So it seems like every year in the offseason, he took a challenge and got himself to become a better player. And last year, career highs in points and rebounds and assists and all-star appearance, a gold medal. And then he goes down, you know, 16, 18 games into the season. And I think because of, as you say, how well Lowry played, we suddenly forget that DeRozan is one hell of a player and was as important, if not more important, to the Raptors last year than even Kyle Lowry was. You know, that was a 1-2 punch last season, the two of them together, Jeff. And I think if you go back to pretty much a year ago to the day, we were talking about Lowry being as deserving as DeRozan to go to the All-Star game because these two were essentially driving the force behind the Raptors. And for Lowry to have tried to carry the load for 20-plus games this year without DeRozan, I think you saw that it started to catch up a little bit. Now that he's back, and he seems to be getting his game legs back and getting his conditioning back, I think DeRozan is going to become that sort of 1A, 1B to Kyle Lowry yet again.
Are you reading anything at all into the fact that the Raptors starting five, and this wasn't the case 2 games ago. They had Amir out there and Gravis Vasquez, the starting five had a real good game. I think they combined for something like 80 points. Again, kind of a slow start yesterday. Is that something at all that concerns you, the fact that we're still seeing, those slow starts? I think it was almost 4 minutes in last night's game before they scored their first points.
Yeah, and you go back to a few games ago against Philadelphia when it was 15-0 for the Sixers, and
right,
they were kind of looking sideways as to what the heck was happening against one of the league's worst teams. You know what? It is a little bit concerning to me, but at the same time, it still existed. I would argue, even early in the year when things were going well for the Raptors and DeRozan was healthy, there were times when the Raptors weren't getting off to great starts. When DeRozan went down, and obviously you have a different starting five, what was one of the issues? Raptors getting off the slow starts, whether it be the first or the third. Now DeRozan's back. Vasquez is in for Ross. You're still getting off the slow start. So unless, and obviously I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek, unless you're doing something drastic and putting DeRozan or Kyle Lowry into the second unit, and I'm not saying it's all on them, to me it's more a product of the collective philosophy of the guys or the collective just attention to detail of the entire team. Because you've had, whether it be Landry Fields starting, James Johnson starting, Gravis Vasquez, DeMar DeRozan, Ross off the bench, Ross in the starting lineup. You've had a lot of different starting fives so far this year, and yet the same issue still exists, you know, from time to time. So I don't know that it's the core right now that's on the floor, and more so just the guys themselves collectively having to have, again, a greater attention to detail starting ball games.
Eric Smith joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Eric, are you getting the sense that the past three games or so that it's kind of been Dwayne Casey's, one of his main focuses has been simply trying to get Terrence Ross going again, and whether that has to happen as a starter or as we've seen lately off the bench, that's kind of the quote unquote thing right now, isn't it? The thing right now is trying to get Terrence Ross right.
I think it is, because you could easily, and this, you know, I'm stoking the fire here, I'm sure, for a lot of folks on Twitter, but you could easily have James Johnson playing some of those minutes, especially backing up DeRozan, who essentially is playing more of the three now with Vasquez and Lowry in the backcourt starting. But I think you would risk losing Terrence Ross completely if you went from starter to not even playing. So I think to have him in that second unit, to know that he's still got a pretty good defensive philosophy somewhere built in, ingrained in his head, and he's also a pretty darn good shooter, it can help space your floor and help provide some offense and some distant shooting in your second unit. So I think that's probably where Dwayne's thinking. All right, I pulled him from the starting lineup, but I can't lose this guy. Mentioned that. I'll tell you the other thing as well, not to go down the trade rumor path, but you lose value for the guy if he's a player who, you know, hey, anybody can be traded anytime. You're just talking about Wayne Gretzky to St. Louis. You know, Shaq was traded. Kareem was traded. Guys are dealt all the time. So to me, there's nobody untouchable on any roster, in any league, on any team. But if Terrence Ross is a guy that perhaps you considered in a deal at one point, whether it be this year, next year, or future years, I think you kill his value as well if you suddenly rip him from the starting lineup and then he's a non-factor, not even playing minutes. So I think to kind of answer your Ross question, I think, yeah, you've got to try and get him kick-started, make sure his confidence stays strong, and see if he can fit into this role. This is where he was when his career started, and this is where he was when the season started last year when you thought that Rudy Gay was part of your future. He was going to be that spark, that sixth man, backing up at the two or the three, being that guy that, depending on the rotation on any given night or how effective it was on any given night, he might be on the floor to finish ball games. You trusted the guy, but he wasn't yet a bona fide everyday starter. He started 60-plus games last year, started into the postseason, started this year, and now you're not seeing enough from him. Sorry, we got to kickstart you. But I don't think it's the point where you're saying, suddenly this guy can't play, and he's not even a rotation any longer.
Eric, we appreciate you doing this. You'll be back at it Saturday, Sportsnet 590, The Fan 360. We'll have the Washington Wizards-Raptors game. That will be fascinating to see the Raps match up against the Wiz.
It should be a good one, because it could very well be for second place in the conference in a head-to-head battle. And, you know, you remember the Raptors already got a monster win over the Wizards earlier this year, so it should be a good one.
Take care, Eric.
Thanks, Jeff.
It's Eric Smith, play-by-play voice of the Raptors on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Again, the Raptors' next game in Sportsnet 590 The Fan will be Saturday against the Washington Wizards. That game will also be on Sportsnet 360. Eric Smith and Paul Jones will have the radio call. Matt Devlin and Leo Routens will have the TV call. The Toronto Blue Jays. I was going to say they made news yesterday, but they didn't really make news as much as they kind of found themselves in the middle of things with a report by Todd Zielicki out of Philadelphia that the Blue Jays were one of the teams that have expressed an interest in Jonathan Papelbon, the Phillies closer who's on the market. A couple of things to keep in mind. One, Toronto is on Jonathan Papelbon's no trade clause. Although, as I always tell people, the no trade clause is simply a negotiating machine. It's a way of getting more money out of your team. In other words, you go to the team, yeah, I'll waive the no-trade clause. Give me an extra $1 million and I'll waive the no-trade clause. Give me an extra $500,000, I'll waive the no-trade clause. So I don't pay as much attention to no-trade clauses as a lot of people do. Troy Gloss had a no-trade clause to Toronto. Guess what? He ended up in Toronto. Scott Rowland had a no-trade clause to Toronto. Guess what? He ended up in Toronto. So no-trade clauses are basically worth whatever the team trading the players willing to pay to get him out of it. Anyhow, nonetheless, Jonathan Papelbon was linked with the Toronto Blue Jays yesterday. Makes a certain amount of sense in that the Blue Jays are looking for a closer. Papelbon clearly has the pedigree. He's a bit of a lunatic, but it wouldn't be the first closer to be a lunatic and have some success. It would be an interesting acquisition for the Blue Jays. Some of the national writers in the States, folks like Ken Rosenthal, have immediately poo-pooed that. There seems to be an indication, or there seems to be a sense, that Jonathan Papelbon will more likely end up with the Milwaukee Brewers than anybody else. But let's see what Mike Wilner has to say about it. We do know that now that the presidency is settled, the focus with the Toronto Blue Jays returns to finding a closer or to at least addressing the back end of the bullpen and maybe even as well addressing second base. We settled Paul Beeston. Let's talk to Mike Wilner about the on-field things the Jays have to do. Mike Wilner will join the Jeff Blair Show at 10:40.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, admit it. If you're my age, every city you went to on the road, you tried to dial up 867-5309 with that city's area code just to see who answered. Seriously. Like for about a year, it was a thing. You roll into the city, throw your bags down in the hotel room, maybe have something to eat, do some stuff, and you go, yeah, 867-5309. So if I go area code 915-867-5309, who's going to answer? Anyhow, it was a thing, trust me. Mike Wilner. Speaking of a thing, Mike Wilner joins the Jeff Blair Show. Did you? You never did that, did you?
Call that number?
Oh, yeah.
No, I never.
Okay, let's do it right now.
Never did.
No. I'm just going to pull a random area code here.
I feel awful for whoever has that number.
Travis McKenzie, who knows this stuff, says there's a guy with the website that did it. Let's just do it. Let's just see. Give me a random area code, Mr. Wilner.
513-514.
That's Montreal. Come on. 517.
All right.
867-5309. Let's see. See if we can talk to somebody here.
This is overwhelming.
The number I have called is not assigned.
Oh, there smart. You
go. Great radio. That was like Mike Francesa opening his goodie bag from the Super Bowl the one year. You remember that? You remember that couple? It was last year where he did it on TV, which was fine, but he was also on the radio at the same time. So all you heard was... Oh, look at this. Don't know what this is. Anyhow, Ken Rosenthal's tweeted something out. You wanted to break some news, right? Right?
Ken Rosenthal already broke it. But yeah, apparently Casey Jansen just signed with the Washington Nationals. So,
Where did we hear that first, Mr. Wilner?
Where did you hear that first?
Who mentioned that first on the air?
I'm assuming since you're so proud of it, it's you.
Yes. Although I took a lot of grief because I forgot that Drew Storen was there.
Storen is there. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah. Although there you go. I mean, Casey Jansen gives him good depth. That's a great place for Casey.
Yeah, I kind of thought he would wind up in L.A. setting up Kenley Jansen just because of the how awesome that would be for one thing, and because of how much trouble the Dodgers had in the bullpen last year in the playoffs. But with Rafael Soriano leaving, Casey's got a chance to either set up Storen or have Storen set up him. So it's a good situation.
So he's going to get $5 million, around $5 million with the National. That's about right.
Yeah, it's a little light, I think, but, I mean, not for the end of January, I guess. We'll see what Soriano and K-Rod go for. I'm expecting them to be more in the 8 neighborhood, but but I think... Yeah, Casey never really was never a big name who I think would command a ton of dough, even though he was one of the most effective closers in the game the last 3 years.
Okay, so I've Travis McKenzie has pulled this off the internet for me. Jenny, are you there? Between December 11th to 12th, 2004, free weekends and no long-distance charges, guy called up, starting with the 200s, every area code possible, 867-5309. Everyone. That is unbelievable. Cannot be completed as dialed, appears to be the major. The major response. Does not accept block call. This is really good. Chuck 613, Travis McKenzie says, that's Ottawa, isn't it?
Yep.
I should know. I used to live there. Keep talking, Wilner, while I check 613. Tell me something I need to know about the Blue Jays.
They're not getting Jonathan Papelbon. How about that?
Okay, tell me why they're not getting Jonathan Papelbon.
Lots of reasons why they're not getting Jonathan Papelbon, but I think the biggest reason is that they're not interested in Jonathan Papelbon.
By the way, let me interrupt. Apparently, the area code 613 was, hi, you reach Jenny at Song Plays. And then it was a male voice, leave a message. That is awesome. All right.
This is fantastic radio.
I know it is. So they... Yeah, Jonathan Papelbon, and the report came out from Philadelphia, from Todd Zielicki of MLB.com.
Right, and whoever gave it to Todd, I mean, chances are, first of all, whoever gave it to Todd from the Phillies is trying to get a Papelbon deal done. They know Milwaukee's interested, and they've been having a hard time coming to a conclusion on a deal with the Brewers, and the best way to get someone to move is to say, hey, somebody else wants him too.
Mm-hmm.
And, the only way the Jays would take Papelbon is if Philly pretty much paid all his salary.
Well, and there's also a 2016 option, right, that kicks in. It's an appearance option?
I don't know, but I'll take your word for it. But, it would have to be almost a free pitcher for mm-hmm. the Blue Jays, and I don't think they're interested in doing that at all.
Where do you how many times have I asked you where you see the closer search going? What are we up to? We're in double digits now, but where do you see the closer search going, Mike?
I still see Aaron Sanchez being the closer at this point in time. I think that I think he's the guy who everything just makes the most sense for this year.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, and the truth is I would definitely rather have him being a closer, being a starter for them. But for 1 year, I don't think it's going to hurt his development. A lot of guys have started their careers in the bullpen, and this is where they have the glaring need. They've got four very good starting pitchers, and while Aaron Sanchez could be a great starting pitcher for them, the odds of him being a great starting pitcher as a 22-year-old rookie are not nearly as good as the odds of him being a really good closer as a 22-year-old rookie who's had serious success out of the bullpen for a third of a major league season already. So, it's way easier to find a fifth starter than to find a really good closer. And I think that the way they're built this year, you've said it a million times, they have to win. They have to make the playoffs to save some jobs. I don't know if it's quite that dire, but it's close at the very least. So, I think that's kind of where everybody wants him.
What are we thinking about a second base right now? Do you think that is what it is right now? And
it's a little problematic for me. I mean, I know how much Alex loves to not lose talent and not give guys away, and so people who are out of options always have a leg up towards making the team, and that for me means that Steve Tolleson has a huge leg up on making this team because he's out of options and Ryan Goins isn't, and that means that Meiser Asturiz and Steve Tolleson are the second baseman, with Devin Travis kind of working his way up from Buffalo, with Ryan Goins probably playing shortstop in Buffalo. If Asturiz can do what he did last year in his 11 games, you know, and kind of hold the fort there for 6 weeks till Travis is ready, that's great. But that's a huge if for a guy who's on the wrong side of 30 coming off a trip down the stairs that knocked him out of action for 6 months.
Mr. Wilner, I appreciate you joining us as always. We'll see what the future holds for the Blue Jays.
I think that that's probably the best course of action.
And no James Shields coming here, right?
I wouldn't bet on that. Mm. But there's a better chance of Shields than Papelbon.
I agree.
And there's not much chance of Shields.
I agree entirely. Mike, thanks so much for doing this. Appreciate it.
All right, Jeffrey.
You be well. It's bye. Mike Wilner of our Blue Jays broadcast crew. Host of the Blue Jays Talking Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Bon vivant, raconteur, man about town. And I'm with Wilner. When I first read the Papelbon stuff. I'm like, not certain about that. But I still don't believe that Alex Anthopoulos is totally finished putting together or piecing together this roster. I still think there's a chance we'll see another pitcher. I don't know about an infielder. I tend to kind of go along with Mike in this. I think you may see the Blue Jays go with what they have at second base. You know, if this lineup is as strong as we think it is, maybe you can carry Ryan Goins' bat. The problem I have with that is, in order to carry Ryan Goins' bat, I'd have to get more than, frankly, I suspect I'm going to get from Dalton Pompey in order to do that. That to me is kind of the nut of this issue here. I can make do with Dalton Pompey in center field, not to denigrate Dalton Pompey's abilities by any stretch of the imagination, but I'm being realistic here. I can do with Dalton Pompey in center field and what he's going to give me offensively if I'm getting a little more at a second base than I would get with Ryan Goins. Conversely, I could go with what Ryan Goins was giving me at second base if I was pretty much certain that I was going to get more offensively out of Dalton Pompey. But there's still some time left. There's still some free agents in the market. Everett Cabrera would be an interesting candidate for the Blue Jays. I don't know how much certainty there is around him because of his involvement in the PED issue. A lot of teams, the fact that teams have stayed away from him would probably indicate that there may be more to that story than we know. He would certainly seem to be a guy that might fit in here. But as I said, I do believe Alex is probably going to make one more move. I don't think it's going to be a major move, but it may be a move that would address either of these two situations, the bullpen or second base. And maybe it's possible. Maybe we have to have the discussion more about Brett Cecil seeing some time closing. I'm not a fan of it. I know there are a lot of people out there who think Brett Cecil could close. I just don't think there's a lot of people in the organization who feel that way. I think push comes to shove, if you ask John Gibbons, he would rather have Aaron Sanchez close than Brett Cecil. The Super Bowl is only 4 days away. Thank God. Yesterday was media day, which is the worst day in the history of media, because it's basically a bunch of people reporting on how stupid it is that they're there reporting on how stupid it is. It just, with every year, there's another layer, right? There's people reporting and how stupid it is to be reporting and how stupid it is to be reporting on it. Every year, there's another layer added. This year, of course, there's the whole Marshawn Lynch sideshow. The guy's a punk. People are trying to turn him into, some sort of great statesman. He's making a statement because he's showing up and saying nothing. And sort of flaunting that $500,000 fine. The guy's a punk. If your kid did that, you'd kick him in the ass. And I have no problem with the guy flipping the bird to the NFL. I mean, anytime that happens, it's a good thing because the NFL deserves it. But I think if Marshawn Lynch really wanted to make a statement, don't show up, pay the $500,000. That's a statement. Showing up to make 500 because you're scared of paying $500,000, that ain't no statement. Anyhow, the whole media day thing's a joke to begin with, but you know that. We're going to talk about the NFL. Mark Leibovich, a terrific, terrific writer with the New York Times Magazine, did a phenomenal article on Tom Brady and kind of gets behind the curtain a bit. And there's a fascinating part of the story where he talks to Tom Brady's dad. And Tom Brady's dad says, look, I know my kid. My kid's going to want to play till he's 43 or 44. That doesn't happen in the NFL. This is going to end badly. It is a terrific piece. Read this piece. You'll learn more about Tom Brady than you know. Dave Mahler, who's host of KJR Sports Radio Seattle. His Twitter handle is Softy, KJR. He'll be along to join us. I'm going to ask him, the hell's turned Marshawn Lynch into such a jerk? I mean, I know he wasn't exactly a great citizen when he was with Buffalo, but he's become a bit of a punk. So we'll talk to Dave Mahler about that. We'll take your calls. I'll get your take on Marshawn Lynch. It's a Jeff Blair show. This is Sportsnet 590, The Fan.